for what it's worth, like, so when I tell people this, it's like, for what it's worth, like, the, like, no matter how badly you think you will do, you will not do that. Like, this was, like, professionally studio created, approved by people that have been in the industry for decades, and they horribly misread the room. They did not do the planning. They did not put the effort or the passion into it. They were looking for the dollar signs and the virtue signaling. If you don't do that for your book, you should be fine.
Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Iron Age Marketing. I am Mickey P. As always, my guest today is author C.S. Johnson. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for having me on tonight.
Awesome. So let's begin and kind of talk about a little bit of your background, because when we first got in touch, one of the things that immediately set you apart from most of the other people I've had on the show is you haven't had just one book out. You have an embarrassment of riches and have clearly been doing this for a long time. So tell us a little bit about the long time that you've been doing this. Unless, of course, you just wrote a ton of books in the past year and I have it completely wrong.
I know I've been doing this a long time. So I think I've always wanted to be a writer. My parents actually have some of my old writing assignments and we laugh at them still because you can really see some of the humor creeping in already. I think so. My first book that I finished it in 2007, and it actually got published through like a vanity press at the time. I was 18 and really bitter. It was either that or wait for Disney or somebody else to call me up. You try telling an 18-year-old to be patient, you know. It's and since then, like, with and that was back in 2007, and this is before Kindle took off. This was before a lot of Amazon and ebook publishing took off. So I tried to go the traditional route with my next book, and again, it took a long time and I made a lot of mistakes. So, but I figured out, hey, there's a lot of publishing contests out there. So I submitted Slumbering, which is my first series. I was the first book in my first series, and it actually won second place in a publication contest. So that's how that one got published. And then since then, it's been trying to keep writing and keep doing new things and just basically whatever I want.
Okay. Now, how do you publish now? Like, what is it? Are you a traditionally published author now? Or you do the Kindle yourself, the KDP, whatever it is?
I have one traditionally published series and I have the rest of it. I am the queen of my own media empire. It's usually how I explain it to people.
Okay. Well, so what does I guess a media empire look like for you?
About 40 books and all my audiobooks and everything else that I've done. So I've been very good about making sure that I have full control and full rights of everything in recent years. So kind of growing up in the kind of like a great swap out and the democratization of the internet with publishing, where a lot of the gatekeepers are passing away, you realize that a lot of media today, like the big five, even some of those larger, smaller presses, a lot of them have really sneaky clauses in their contracts that, you know, you shouldn't have to deal with.
Yeah.
Yep. Some of the things I've heard from different people telling me about their contracts is really just downright frightening.
Well, specifically coming from like the background that I have, and I like talking about marketing. And the thing that I've talked to the few traditional people I have had that have done the traditional route, it's like, well, I still do all the same work. I only just have to give away a cut of it to them because I still market it. Like they kind of have the money to do anything for me. So why did I do this in the first place? Just to give away money? I don't know.
It is a labor of love a lot of times, and there is a big investment, I think, just in time and money. Like, I've made a good deal of money back, but not all of my books have made their money back. So some of that just because I don't follow the rules to make money.
Well, and so that's a good question. What, I guess, what do you classify as the rules to make money in writing?
So the first thing is pretty much staying in your own lane. I haven't done that ever. I'm the jack of all trades and the queen of all, frankly.
Okay.
So if you want to make good money, I stick to a genre. Like, I started off with fantasy, so that was kind of a good one. But I have fairy tales, I have science fiction, I have nonfiction. I have some good satire pieces. So, you know, there's just a lot of stuff in it that I really enjoy. I just figure I'm more like Beyonce in that regard, you know. So.
Oh, goodness. You got a queen bee over here, folks. So
I knew her as Foxy Cleopatra when I grew up, for what it's worth. That's my first reference of Beyonce.
I think I gave up on the Austin Powers movies by the time that happened. I'm that's where I'm at. I'm more of a Heather Graham guy.
Oh.
So we were talking before the show, you're a homeschooling parent, and one of the things that's come up a lot is, you know, finding time to write. Now, well, you say that, and then you talk about how much writing you actually have done. Like, what do you actually consider to be like a normal amount of writing for like someone to put out?
I think a lot of it first of all, a lot of it does vary author by author. I need to soak into my work. You know, it's almost like when you get into a pool. Some people can just dive right in and be comfortable. I have to like ease in.
So you're not like I'm gonna do my 1,000 pages or 1,000 words a day and then like that'll be it. You gotta find the zone, and like if you're not feeling it, you're not doing it, kind of thing.
Yeah, my discipline is horrible. I've actually, like, every year I've tried to pick like some part of my work ethic or my life to like fix that year, and discipline has been the last 3 years running.
I don't know what I could do about my discipline. It's I have the background where, like, as a musician, much like you, it's like, well, when the impetus hits and the, you know, the vibe strikes, I'll do it, and then a year will go by, and like, oh, I haven't written a song in a long time. It's weird. So having written a bunch of things, do you have something that like you find is your favorite to write, or is there like a place that if you could pigeonhole yourself and like have that discipline to like do the thing that you do, what would that be?
I have a real affinity for romance, just because, you know, I get frustrated with people who are very cynical, I guess, because it's like, I've been there, I know, but you either you find a way to grow past it, or, you know, you just give up. And it's not fair if you give up to like feel like you should make everybody else give up too.
Interesting take.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not for the cynic to remain cynical, and it's just not fair for the skeptic to remain skeptical either. Those are things that bother me. It's just like, well, why don't you just admit to everybody that you're lazy?
Okay, the skeptical one would be interesting to get go on.
Yes, and it, like, perpetual cynicism is just a cover for being.
Well, and one of the things I have found with a lot of the people I've talked to doing the show is you described it perhaps different than they do, but there's a lot of people that seem fed up. And it's one of the things that why everyone has gone the non-traditional route and is starting to put out books, because everything is, it's the undermining of the tropes that they think they're doing. They're making the dark version, or, you know, everybody's trying to make The Boys as opposed to make Superman.
I was actually going to say, is it the Homelander syndrome?
Yeah, basically. It's like everybody wants to make all their heroes, like even at the best, they just want them to be complicated and gritty. And it's like, you know, I get it in the 80s and 90s, that was the thing, but now we're 2 decades past that. And I personally, is one of the things I do appreciate is that authors are trying to write
hopeful characters that are trying to make at least the world of fiction not as bleak as the real world feels right now.
I've told my readers several times, if you want a happy ending, you gotta believe in it first. It doesn't guarantee that you'll get it, but
it's like without those things to look up to, it's like there's a certain degree of which, yeah, maybe we'll never be perfect. We'll never be as good as we want to be. But if you don't have that North Star to shoot to, you're never going to be anything. Like you're just going to be, I don't know what we're going to be. Not worth it.
Well, there's so much of it that goes into a misunderstanding, but I think stems from a misunderstanding of human nature. And, you know, like we're a Christian homeschooler family, so we talk about living in a world of sin and how the things that we want are often, you know, tainted by sin and the shadow of the valley of death. And it can really get complicated for people who don't understand that, like, just because you want something doesn't mean that it's a good thing to want, you know? And just because you wish something was true doesn't mean that it will be. And I get a lot of atheists that say, well, same to you. And I'm like, exactly. Yeah, but yeah, it is like you said, pointless to kind of give up. Yeah, you're not going to do anything with giving.
Well, no, absolutely. I mean, that's, and once again, you know, the whole Iron Age, I guess, era is coined by Razor Fist. This time where personally, I think that everybody benefits from it. Even if you were the most raging leftist and wanted to just write commie screed after commie screed, it's still better for you to get away from like the over-democratized, just story-destroying system that's going to warp whatever you try and put through it. So like, no matter who you are, you're not going to get out something worth writing when everything is by committee. Like, good or bad, it's just going to end up kind of trash.
I mean, like, the rare exceptions are out there, I suppose. But I have yet to find one.
I mean, I guess nobody's telling Brandon Sanderson what he has to do at this point, but...
Oh, he's capitulated some.
I don't follow him that well. I know of him as the guy that took over my dad's beloved Wheel of Time series after Robert Jordan died.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well. I know him as the Kickstarter King, so.
Really? That's a new one to me? Why is that?
Well, he had a Kickstarter a few years ago where he wrote, like, that whole series, his last, like, one of his secret series during COVID, and he released it on a Kickstarter, and I think it made, like, $4 million or something. And it was a record for artists, and other people like me looked at that and was like, oh, I wish I could do that.
I think you all can do that. We just have to learn a few things about reaching out to other people.
Well, if the whole like the whole like sagely wisdom of there are no small parts, there are no small actors, only small parts or something. You know, what was it?
No small parts, but small characters.
Okay, there you go. There's my son.
Stop it out. Say we appreciate it on our end.
I had it explained to me. Well, the better way of explaining it was, I had it explained to me is, you never know when your book will, like, make the difference in someone's life that they needed it. It's like if you're a doctor and you're on a plane. I mean, there are lots of millions of doctors in the world, but if you're in a plane and someone's having a heart attack and you just have to be a cardiologist, you know, and you're the only one on that plane, that's enough of it. I mean, you make enough of a difference by just being there.
I've absolutely given this speech to people I've done, like, sat down with, and it's like, it may seem like nothing to you, but you don't know when there's going to be that one person who, like, is ready to jump, and it's your words that are going to save them. Like, you don't know when that person's going to show up. You don't know. And how terrible are you to prevent them from getting what you have to create? How imposter syndrome actually damages the world, I guess, is the way I look at it. It's like, if you believe in your writing and you believe it's good and believe that there's an audience for it, you owe it to every one of those people to try and get it out there.
I totally agree. And And like I said earlier, there is a bit of investment doing it. But I mean, like, if somebody, like you said, is on the brink and it's your words that will save them, or may possibly save them even, isn't it worth giving it a few minutes?
So, it's one of the reasons, like, I focus so much on relationship building as an author. And that's to me, that's what marketing is. It's one by one going out there. I don't care if it's, you know, a new podcaster or somebody who can connect you to a wider audience, or if it's a reader. I think a lot of, in particular, authors focus so much on story that they tend to forget about, number one, as an author, how important that is to readers. And how important, like, characters are to readers. I have a YouTube short series called Characters Create Connection. And it's about, like, main characters and stories and how important they are. Because that's how you see yourself in whatever you're reading. Like, at the end of the day, like, you write fantasy. Are you going to do it better than Tolkien did? Probably not. But you can do it the way that you're going to do it. And you can put a character in there that's going to resonate very different than anything he would have written into that story. And that's how creators can make their mark and really connect with an audience. So I go on these Kickstarter, these Indiegogo, these Fund My Comic pages, and I read. And all they want to do is tell me about their world building and their story. And it's like, look, a Cthulhu monster is a Cthulhu monster. What guy's fighting? That's what I care about. What guy is writing this story? That's going to be the thing that makes me pick up book A versus book B. Like, I can assume if there's a Cthulhu story, it's written one way, and I'll probably be okay with the story one way or the other, you know?
Well, I mean, you said you were libertarian, so you used the horror stuff, right?
Now, to kind of, I guess, move along, what is your thing that you're working on now, or the thing that you're actually promoting at this moment?
All right. So I actually just put it up like this week too. So today I would like to talk about my Kickstarter for my first series I actually talked about earlier. The first book in it is Slumbering. It's the Starlight Chronicles. And I have a graphic novel edition of the first book coming out next year. My kids are at the age where they like books, and I really feel bad. They don't like them as much as I liked them as a kid.
It's a generational thing. My kid likes her tablet, too.
Yeah. You know, I bought books on their tablet. It just seems to be the last thing they want to do some days. But they really like graphic novels. So, like, my daughter likes the Warriors Cat kind of theme book by Aaron Hunter, and my kids have Dogman. I refuse to buy them Captain Underpants. Just gonna say that now.
I read Captain Underpants when I was in college. That was entertaining, I guess.
My son likes history, and he likes military history especially. So he's been reading the Nathan Hale series, the Hazardous Tales from Nathan Hale. And we've had a good job, like, getting through those. I'm really happy. But they're all like graphic novels, and they like devour them, and it's, I'm sitting here and I'm like, okay, maybe I can put one of my books into graphic novel.
Don't fight it. Just go along with it.
Yeah, it's another layer of, like I said, an investment that you kind of have to put up with. And you don't know going into it sometimes if you're going to make your money back. I mean, art's expensive. Good art is really expensive. But I'm also really proud, and I hate asking for money. So.
I mean, I'll be honest, the hardest people to kind of talk to on here for me are the comic book creators, because there's just so many layers of sending other people money to even make that happen. And you don't know if you're going to sell a single copy. Like, you're so many thousands of dollars in the hole before it ever starts. And
I actually have a comic book series, so yes, I can attest, it's expensive. The nice thing is that I have really a lot of support from my family, and I have a really good story for it too, so I'm really not disappointed.
Well, I mean, that's a good question here. How important do you think family is to, like, the creative's journey? Like, is it the thing that, like, keeps you going when you don't want to go? Or is it, like, I know it's been a mixed bag for me, where it's like, sometimes the people that kept me going, man, maybe they shouldn't have, and then the people that are trying to talk me out of it when I'm actually really gearing to do things.
I think it's important to have people that will slow you down, because when you're excited, you don't tend to think every and sometimes you can come up with like a really good idea, and like it's almost like waking up in the middle of the night and wrote it down, and then in the morning, like, what was I thinking? I've already kind of determined that my family's used to me writing enough that if I have enough of an idea of something that I want to do, I'm just going to do it. And if I fall off the cliff, they'll at least make sure that I'm wearing the repelling harness first. That's cool. And I have a lot of, like, and the nice thing is, and I talked about this week with Thanksgiving, is that I wrote a lot when I was younger because I was lonely. And my writing helped me find a lot of people that have become some of my best friends. So I don't ever negate that when I think about the cost of it. So that in itself is well worth the effort. Let's be honest, the money was going to go to a therapist.
Well, good Lord, yeah, absolutely. Technically, at least you could net out positive this way in some way eventually, right?
You can't take your money with you when you die. So I'm raising my kids to earn their own money too. So it's like, if nothing else, you'll be fine. Earn the money that you make yourself. Don't give your mother any.
I've been teaching my daughter how to sell since the minute that she came out. Like, here's what we're going to do, and these are the techniques, and these are how psychologically you have to approach it. And
yep. No. This one might sound the same thing. Look, honey, look, you're going to start dating when you're a teenager, probably behind my back, because I won't approve it until you're 18. You're going to get a lot of rejection. You might as well get used to it now.
Every no is just one more tick till you get your yes.
Yes.
true salesman approach to things. Now, given as long as you've done this, I assume that you have some type of presence that's just naturally been built up as an author. Like, so you're not in the I'm releasing a first book stage. If you were to look at somebody who is in that first book stage, what are the things that you would tell them, like, to just get out of their head right now?
I actually really want to do this. I want to get a poster. I want to design a poster that says somehow Palpatine returned on it. And like, someone was paid boo-boos of money to put that in a film, and it ruined the Golden Goose franchise. So there's no way this.
One thing ruining the Golden Goose franchise was not putting the three of them in a movie again, but amongst other things.
Well, I mean, that was probably like the final like paper cut. On a body that had already been axed to death.
What does that mean to you when you say it, or what do you want? What does that mean to, in particular, that audience?
For what it's worth, like, so when I tell people this, it's like, for what it's worth, like, the like, no matter how badly you think you will do, you will not do that. Like, this was like professionally studio created, approved by people that have been in the industry for decades, and they horribly misread the room. They did not do the planning. They did not put the effort or the passion into it. They were looking for the dollar signs and the virtue signaling. If you don't do that for your book, you should be fine.
You know, so maybe something in there even about, like, you know, write what you believe in.
Right. You can tell you can tell when an author has no passion for their work and they're just writing for the paycheck.
Everything Stephen King's written since like his first book.
Well,
I kid. I actually do still like some of his stuff. But it often feels way too like collecting a paycheck.
Well, and part of the reason that literature is under the humanities in college classes, no matter what they're teaching these days. Is because it's not, literature is something that makes us human. It's a defining trait of humanity, and we all share in it. And as inane and incoherent as some of the people on social media have become in the last decade, you know, on some level, I can sympathize and even empathize with them. You know, I've been terribly upset world hasn't gone my way. And like I said, that's kind of the reason I started writing, because I really wanted a world that would help me make sense of my current chaos. So I really tried hard to lose myself to find myself. Stuff in my writing.
And to kind of, we'll say, not dwell in the negative. Those same authors that were just putting out their first book. We don't want everything to be like, you don't do any of these things. What is something that you think that you wish you'd known back then to do?
I think I would have done, I probably wouldn't have done much different, because I kind of waited a little bit, because I got Slumbering published initially in 2013. So that was pretty much, I think I published my first Kindles, like KDP. I published, I think, a year after that. So 2014, 2015. I think I would have just waited if I had thought about it. So
with that first book, do you feel like that one is different than your self-released stuff, having gone through that process? Like, do you think it's better or worse for having gone that route?
I think so. Slumbering is about, it almost is kind of like, and this was before like Marvel started getting really big. I started writing in 2007, and my protagonist is a narcissist. Like, he's just very self-involved. Everything has to go his way. I did not make him sympathetic enough at first. People have read it and like, I've gotten hate mail from it. It's funny because I can tell how old the person is that writes me letters talking about it. It's like, oh, you're like in your 30s, you don't like this kid because he's not in the grad. And if he's a teenager, it's like, this kid was cool, I liked him. And he becomes a lame because he eventually becomes the cool kid and he kind of gives it up gradually to do the right thing. So it's kind of funny hearing it. Probably the big thing I would change there. Don't write an unlikable protagonist without giving him enough of good, clear reasons for people to sympathize with
him. What's it, that Cumberbatch guy, his Sherlock, I like, particularly because he is a pretty terrible guy.
And I think that's an excellent example of doing it kind of in a balanced way. So for my series, I wanted to write for boys. At the time, I was an English teacher, and I wrote, like, Harry Potter was big, and it was pretty much the only thing that the boys in my class liked to read, aside from a few other random things, like Power Rangers and Star Wars and, you know, a lot of the comics that was picking up even then. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to write a boy superhero, and it's going to be a narcissist. He's going to be the cool kid who becomes absolutely human by the end of high school. So let's see if I can do it.
Well, certainly with boys, I know that there's something about narcissism as a concept that I can't speak to whether or not women or girls feel it, but I definitely have a song that I wrote called Orson Welles. And it's kind of about, the whole idea was written from this perspective of a man who's just encumbered and weighed down by his own genius and the hubris of the rest of the world just not understanding his genius. And well, it's, to me, it's like, I think in so many of us, there's that part of us that just, if only the world really understood me and what I have to offer, like, things would be different. And, you know, maybe it's narcissism. Maybe to me, it's maybe a way of your own insecurities trying to hold you up. You know, is it really narcissism? Is it just like the front that you have to put up to kind of believe that you're more capable than you are? I don't know.
No, that's a good way to put it. I mean, like, I explain him as a narcissist, but yeah, so he's deeply insecure and he is looking for somebody who can understand him more than somebody. In the meantime, though, it's kind of like, you know, you'd rather be loved or feared, type of Machiavellian high school politics, but your worth is kind of like an illusion. And
the quote from my favorite movie, for the record, to it when I don't know if you've ever seen the movie. It's A Bronx Tale, and he the kid whose dad's a bus driver, but he's also like a male role model who's a what do you call it, a mob boss, and he asks him, do you think it's better to be loved or feared? And you know his answer is, you know, it's better to be feared if you're me.
Yeah. Oh well. I love literary fiction. When people ask me what you read, I like to read memoirs. I like literary fiction. I like a lot of nonfiction stuff too. So writing fantasy, I do my best. What I tell people is I do my best to keep my characters honest. So you can't really write good people or bad people if they're not at least honest about stuff. Hamilton is overly honest.
Right on. Well, is there anything else you'd like to like my audience to know? If not, where can I send them to look you up and find what you're doing right now?
Okay. Well, I am on X and I'm on Gab and Facebook, and I'm trying to get back to Instagram a little bit just because.
I'm not a big Instagram person myself. I put stuff there and then I do nothing with it.
I think, well, like when COVID happened, like my kids got kind of like their school shut down. At the time we were in private school and the school got shut down, I think 2.5 months early. It was like April. We were like, we're just going to close for the year and the older kids will have online options and stuff. But my kids were young. And I think ever since then, I've been playing catch up. So after that, it was like, okay, I got to say goodbye to some social media. Things are starting to feel a little bit more.
Right on. Well, I'd like to thank you so much for coming on today.
Oh, well, thank you.
And hope you have a good one.
Yes, thank you very much.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you, but maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.